I envision a future in which all learners of all ages may discuss issues and realities important to their learning with experts in every field who care enough about the future of humankind to share their expertise freely and thoughtfully. This future will come about through a melding of technologies, among which interactive video conferencing is central.
Live, more or less, from the rooftop of the St. James Hotel in San Diego, California, this is Scott Merrick from the Vanderbilt University Center for Science Outreach with Snacks for the Brain.
Combat and cover, I'll be safe.
So, y'all, that was Bill DeRome, Liquid Light, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Check them out when you get a chance. It's a great, great website. I'm here at the National Educational Computing Conference in San Diego, California. It's sponsored by the International Society for Technology and Education, ISTE, I-S-T-E. And it's an annual conference, and I don't know what the count will be this year. There were 18,000 educators, technologists, and administrators at the conference in Philadelphia last year. I suspect it's over 20,000 people this year. It's a zoo, y'all. And I'm up on my hotel roof tonight looking at a waxing moon. It's getting fuller, and a slightly overcast sky, and a wonderful 360-degree panorama of San Diego, California. I can see the convention center from here. And there are people yelling in the distance and disco music playing a couple of doors down. It's a cool city. I've had a blast here this week. I've chatted with David Warlick, who is a maven. And I think that if you check out the Connect Learning podcast, I'll leave a link in the show notes at snacksforthebrain.blogspot.com. Please check that out. If you hear people in the background here, it's because there's a group of, you know, a half dozen people up on the roof here, and it's 3 minutes till the roof closes at 11 o'clock, and I'll probably get chased out of here and move venue into my hotel room here at the St. James Hotel. But I want to share with you some of the audio I collected moving around in the poster sessions, and I hope the background sound is not too extraordinarily distracting for you, but man, there's so much happening here. If I could clone myself twice, I might be able to pick up enough of the sessions to really get value out of this conference. There's almost too much going on, but the chance to rub elbows with David Warlick and Ian Jukes and Jan Zanitas and Elaine Shuck and my friend Joan Rory, I think is invaluable for me. It's so rejuvenating. I'm looking at the NBC building across the way and the AT&T building across the way and the Union Bank building. Let's get right down to it with Snacks for the Brain, episode 40.
In which Mr. Merrick finds the future of educational technology in San Diego, California.
Here's me on the conference floor, cruising around, picking up some audio.
Let's go to the conference poster sessions floor.
Oh, big omission here. I forgot Janine Lim. I had a great time chatting with her. Her blog, by the way, is Video Conferencing Out on a Limb. You can check that from the snacksforthebrain.blogspot.com website. Okay, here we go. Conference floor, random access. The first clip is from a poster session called A Noob, as in a newbie, in Second Life. And it has to do with the virtual 3D world at Second Life and Auburn University's use of Second Life to create adult learning spaces for teachers and students to interact as avatars.
Very interesting.
Just a little joke, y'all. Actually, it's not really a joke. I wanted to demonstrate what happens when you try to apply noise reduction to this recording. So I did not do so. What you need to do, if you'd like to hear this, and I hope you do, is to listen closely for the voices, and your ears will adapt, and you will be able to hear some conversation, I promise. Imagine yourself in a huge conference center open room with poster sessions going about 12 feet away from one another. Everybody talking, and away from that little section of that huge room, a whole bunch of other centers with a lot going on. So listen up to the dialogue from A Noob in Second Life. Pretty cool stuff.
I have a jet ski, I have a black van, they're on there, right around.
Do all sorts of things.
Oh, interesting, because just getting, right.
So just the initial getting them there. And then what we did was we created a classroom where they learned how to do the different things in Second Life, like creating things.
Moving
things, tools they would be using throughout the rest of the
session. That's what people are doing, you know, like with the how we did that, with the scripting of like this person, like I know that makes food, she caters parties and stuff.
Yes, it was.
She makes sushi with a nice.
It was a good introduction because generally we were there when they were there.
Okay.
She did that first time.
So
when they had questions.
Well, Second Life isn't an asynchronous thing. I mean, Second Life
scripted,
is totally synchronous.
Right, it can be scripted.
Oh, yeah. That worked out really well for us.
So, is that
so how did you control the mature things that are happening in Second Life?
We didn't. Since we're working with adults, we just say,
apparently in this case,
you know, there are places. As a matter of fact, even right next to the land that Lyndon gave us, there was an adult area right next to us.
So, like, for instance, someone could have scripted that said, you know, you wear a mask as you go around different areas, you'll run into this type of thing.
I don't think we had
so there's just tons of
person-to-person interaction that was inappropriate.
We go back to
once they learn how to fly and go to
the exactly, they can transfer themselves and then end up in, oh my God, what's going on there?
There's a lot of oh my God on Second Life.
Well, it's just like the internet, you know, you go to some place and something pops up, you just say, you know,
so
if it happens, if it happens, leave.
That's a life skill too. You have to teach, you know, I teach the kids to my little kids, I teach them, you know, exit out and tell everyone, cover yourself.
But Second Life has, I saw an entry, I haven't been there, but they have a place, I don't know how to tell you, for educators, don't they? So don't you log in differently?
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh.
No.
They just started, from what I read, a teen area where adults are not allowed to go.
Right, the teen area I know about, which I think is really
when you first log in, if you go in the regular way to log in, you go through that learning area.
Right, I skipped and that was
what
we did. We took that on students so they could get back over to where we were doing this stuff.
Right. Oh, okay, then I thought they actually created somehow another portal. So that for educational purposes, I know they want to have educators use it.
Right. I understand Harvard University has an island that they purchased, and I would bet that's Chris Deedy doing that. I'm going to try to track him down here and see.
Okay.
Did you go to the NASA launch? That's a pretty cool thing. The shuttle launch they had.
Yeah, you know, I only played around with it a month or so ago for like I got really into it just to get into it to see what it's about. But then, you know, it's like one of those things you've got to. The learning curve is pretty high, but beyond the interest curve, I mean, you really have to invest a good amount of time to sort of figure out what's going on and benefit from it. I think cognitively and motivationally, and then you're hooked. But I don't mean that in a negative way. And then I can easily see spending like hours and hours there.
Oh, that's what I did when I first got on.
Time management issue.
And I think that's a major problem for most, like you were saying, he teaches college people, digital immigrants, is that we're not, you know, we're not by nature that gamey, you know, as a group.
Well, a lot of them don't have the time to do that.
Well, that's what,
In their real lives.
It's like golf, you know, I mean, you can't sort of play golf.
Right. That's a really good analogy.
And have fun. Only because I just played golf for the first time in my life and said, man, I could get into this game, but I don't have the time to learn how to play it well.
What amazes me, you're talking about, because I go back like a video that I was showing, the things that people have really gotten into it.
I wanted to say, so, I don't know where I was, but these avatars were like these creatures. It was in some forest. I was totally fascinated by it, because I liked the idea that they were these creatures, and shapeshifter kinds of people.
Look at this.
Very, very interesting.
But this is our video. So
you are out here Second Life for fun?
Yeah, just for fun. Yeah.
And you're interested in it educationally? Or?
I very much am. And what you're saying, a separate portal is really a good idea. This Amy Weber tour of the solar system is awesome. I'd love to be able to take my little kids there, but the possibility that somebody's going to walk through, you know, streaking at any given time or fly through is, you know, prohibitive.
Yeah, and I mean, they could feasibly, but you know, maybe that's part of the philosophy, I don't know, is that if you, in fact, you know, just like the real world, that you create barriers to those kinds of things in the way that you construct whatever it is you're constructing.
The copyright
record is
I don't ask questions about
Do you mind if I use some of your audio on a podcast? I'm just, like, I always try to tell people I'm doing that. And you're... This is in.
Derek actually has it.
Aurelio?
Aurelio?
Aurelio. And you're from San Diego?
Yeah,
here. A local,
eh? A local. I rode my bike in.
I was talking with Ray Braswell at Montgomery, Alabama.
And you are?
I'm Scott Merrick at.
There you are.
Vanderbilt Center Society.
Oh, great.
I'm going to take some little excerpts from some of these wanderings around and do a little snack. I did a podcast called Snacks for the Brain.
Oh, great.
That was really sort of distracting and weird. And I heard one criticism of the poster sessions that it was hard to follow what everybody was saying, even if you were there in person. But I still think it's valuable to listen to it, and the ear sort of adjusts, I hope. And I hope you enjoyed listening to that discussion of a Second Life, which is an interest of mine, and I think it has a great educational potential. Meanwhile, by the way, let's take a break and listen to some Amy Ayers, A-Y-E-R-S, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. And the message is all about change, and I think that's what this conference is all about. So, sink back, relax, listen to A Little Time by Amy Ayers.
No more.
You're listening to Snacks for the Brain.
That's Amy Ayers, A Little Time, from music.podshow.com. There's a link in the show notes. Please go buy her music. She's an independent artist and a fantastic one. Great songwriter, great performer, great recorder, just good listening. And it's so apropos to what we're talking about here at NEC 2006, which is helping children learn the way that they learn naturally, which is not the way that we normally teach them. One of the leading national spokespeople for repairing this disconnect between the way students learn and the way students need to be taught is David Warlick of Connect Learning and the Landmark Schools Project. I attended his session called Telling the New Story, which was standing room only here at NEC in San Diego, and recorded a little bit of it, and I have his permission to share some of it on this podcast. This is the last 9 or 10 minutes of a 1 hour talk on telling the new story. Ladies and gentlemen, for your edification, David Warlick.
I watched a movie about baseball. I went outside to play baseball. I watched a movie about a war. I went outside to play war. You know, I got so much energy from this sense of heritage of what I watched on TV. And that energy helped me to learn. We need to do a better job in education of cultivating a sense of heritage, where these kids come from, because I believe there's energy there. And there's energy in orienting the kids toward the future. Freeman, once again, says that there are four kinds of people who are going to prosper in a flat world. They are people who are special, people who are specialized, people who are highly adaptable, people who are anchored. People who are special, I don't know anyone who's special. This is Michael Jordan. These are people who are going to make it because of who they are. They're special. People who are anchored are people who can draw income by touching you or something that you own. People who are going to make a living because of where they live, because they're a ship, because they're a bar, because you know they have to come in direct contact with the people or with the place that they're working. But their economy, their success, is going to be based on the economy that can be generated by the other two, people who are specialized and people who are highly adaptable. People who are specialized are people who know something or can do something that nobody else can do. And people who are highly adaptable are people who can learn and unlearn and relearn very easily. These are the people who need to be coming out of our schools. These are the skills that we need to be instilling in our students to be successful in the 21st century, is people who know how to make themselves an expert and people who know how to learn and unlearn and relearn very easily. Bottom line, the future is no longer secure. My dad worked for Carolina Freight Carriers Corporation for 35 years. Most of the kids that I graduated with from high school, 85% of them went directly into the mills, and they had every intention to spend 35 years in the mills, working in the mills, having kids, retiring with a pension and enjoying their grandkids, and it would probably be a happy life. You know, because it was a secure life, but that security is gone, and we should stop preparing kids for a future of security. Instead, we should prepare them for a future of opportunity. That's the backside of losing the security. We're learning so much, so fast, we're creating so many skills and techniques for taking what we're learning and doing new things and solving problems. We have the potential to solve almost any problem in the near future, to accomplish almost any goal. We have so many opportunities, but that takes a different kind of learning. It takes a different kind of learning experience. It takes different skills. This is me. 1982. Tell you a little story here. This is my old story. I might go over a couple of minutes and I apologize, but it's a good story. My first experience with a computer was with a Radio Shack Model 1 computer, 1981. I'd never seen a desktop computer before. I'd seen mainframes, I'd seen lots of mainframes, but I'd never seen a desktop computer. I had no idea what you'd do with it, I had no idea how it would behave. Now, I was in this class, and the professor was showing us this computer. He set me down at this computer, and I figured, you know, he's going to turn it on, and a bunch of lights are going to start flashing on the screen. You know, I had no sense of what was going to happen. Well, he reached over, and he switched it on, and in the upper right-hand corner, it said, ready. And I fell out of my seat. Because this machine was talking to me. And then he reached in and he typed in, load math program from tape. There was a little cassette drive on the right that started running. And after about 4 or 5 minutes, a menu came up, and there was text up there that said, please press the number of the type of program you want to see. This machine was telling me how to operate it. It was giving me instructions on how to operate it, and I pressed for long division. And it gave me a long division problem. And I answered the question. And for the next 2 minutes, pixel by pixel, it made a picture of a smiling face. I was blown away. The next question I answered wrong. And pixel by pixel, for the next 2 minutes, it made a frowning face. But I was amazed because this was a machine that you operate by communicating with it. I was seduced. I taught history, and I always taught history from the perspective of technology. I said, you know, we invented the bow and arrow, and it affected culture in these ways. We invented agriculture, and it affected culture in these ways. I saw this machine, and I said, this is going to change everything. This is one of those technologies that's going to change everything, and I was seduced. The next year, the middle school that I worked in got one of two grants for our school district. And in that grant, we got 11 Radio Shack Model 3 computers in our school. Model 3s, 16 kilobytes of memory. These things were hot. And no other teacher in my school had any interest in them at all, so I got all 11 of them in my classroom. Now, there was no software. Back then, we thought that just the green glow flashing over the cathode ray tubes, you know, washing over our kids' faces would make them smart. So I taught myself how to program in BASIC. One of the programs that I wrote was called Stock Bearing. It was a stock market simulation. Kids go up to the computer, they start the program, and it gives them a stock market review. There's three stories that I had planted there. And each story was designed to have a logical positive or negative effect on one of the 10 companies that the students had an option to buy stock in. They started out with $100,000. So they read the stories and they decided which companies they're going to spend their money on. And then for the next month, they get three more stories. They decide which companies they need to buy, which companies they need to sell, and they play for 6 months and they make money. Well, after about a week, there was a group of boys who called themselves the Stock Bearers. These kids were making billions and billions and billions of dollars in 1 6-month play. And I'd get on after school, and I'd play for 6 months, and the most I could make was $500,000. You know, and I knew the codes. I should be getting a perfect score. These kids are making millions of dollars. And I asked them, how are you doing this? And they said, oh, Mr. Warlock, we just got shrewd business finance knowledge. We know how to do this. So finally, after a couple of weeks, one of the boys waited until after school, waited until the halls were clear, and he came into my classroom. He said, Mr. Warlock, I need to explain to you how we're doing this. He said, we found a bug in your program. I told him what the bug was. He said, we found a bug in your program. He said, we found that under these conditions, circumstances, we could sell more stock than we owned. So that night, I took one of the computers home with me, and I worked on the code a little bit. Brought it back in the next day, loaded the program on all the other computers, started teaching. First period, study hall, here come the stock bearers. I'm teaching history, here come the stock bearers. I watched Pearson Duval. Pearson Duval is the king of the stock bearers. He comes strutting into my classroom, and he goes to his favorite computer, and he sits down, and he starts typing. And I'm watching as I'm lecturing, I'm watching. And after a few minutes, that cocky look on his face turned into concern. And then it turned into worry. He finally hesitantly raised his hand. He said, Mr. Warlick, what does embezzlement mean? Y'all, that day I realized that what was special about these new machines is not that it's a machine that you operate by communicating, it's because it's a machine that we can communicate with each other in powerful new ways. We can have new conversations with each other. We can have new conversations between the teacher and the students, new conversations between the students and the teachers, new conversations between the school and the community and the classroom and the home, new conversations between the curriculum and the world that it represents. And through these conversations, we have to invent new stories that are so compelling and that are so, so exciting that they're going to smash the old images of the classroom. And people are going to say, that's the kind of classroom I want my children in. That's the kind of classroom I want my grandchildren in. That's the kind of learning I want them to do. Because it makes more sense in the world that I see around me. Thank you very, very much.
David Warlick, ladies and gentlemen. And I think it's time to snap out of the NEC 2006 conference for a minute and pick up a little tech tip tidbit. This week's tidbit is a particularly geeky section that describes everything that happens during that time you're tapping your toes, impatiently waiting for your computer to boot up. This is all about booting up your computer, and I find it quite fascinating. It comes from the Computer Tip of the Week from Dr. T, and it's via the Completely Free Software's weekly newsletter. Okay, booting up. Have you ever wondered what your computer goes through when it's booting up each time you restart your computer? Sometimes computers will start up so quickly, but other times they drag, don't they? Well, every time a computer is booting up, it has to go through what is called a POST test. That's P-O-S-T. POST stands for Power On Self Test. And it's just a little personal startup test for every computer to make sure it meets all of the system requirements, etc., etc., etc. There are actually 10 steps in the post, with the first one testing the power supply to make sure the computer is turned on and that it meets its reset signal. The second step checks to make sure the CPU, central processing unit, can execute instructions. The next two steps are used to ensure that the BIOS, there's a link to the definition of BIOS in the text, and I'll share that at the blog site at snacksforthebrain.blogspot.com. Make sure that the BIOS are readable. Again, the next two steps are devoted to the CMOS, complementary metal oxide semiconductor, to make sure they are readable. The seventh step tests the CPU to make sure it can read all the different forms of memory, like the memory controller, the memory bus, and the memory module. Next, your computer's memory is tested to make sure it is operational and that it can be read and written, as well as capable of containing the POST code. The last two steps deal with the I.O. bus and the controller. They need to be accessible and be able to read and write from the video system and to read all of the video RAM, that's random access memory. If your computer happens to fail any of these steps, an irregular POST will be recorded. The irregular test is known to you by a beep code, beep, and it may often result in you having to restart your computer yet again. There you have it, the basic steps to a system startup test. At least you know now what your computer goes through while starting up, and you have an idea of what might be going wrong if your computer ever fails a proper boot up. That again is from worldstart.com through completelyfreesoftware.com. And I'd like to add that if anybody out there can design a truly instant on system, more power to you, and invite me to your celebration party because it'll be a big one. Alrighty then, back to Snacks for the Brain, episode 40. All right, let's head back out to the exhibitor floor this time for a little talk by David McQuart, who is co-founder and director of communications for the Global Nomads Group. I stopped by the Polycom exhibitor booth on Friday at 1:30 just as David was stepping up to talk in front of a small group of people. I am a firm believer in the Global Nomads Group. Listen up to David McQuart.
So one statistic that shocked me, I don't know about you, but it said that 60% of young Americans don't know where Iraq is. Okay, and this is 3 years after we got into a war with Iraq. 40% of young Americans didn't know that Sudan, which happens to be the largest country in Africa, was in fact in Africa. Some people said it was actually in Europe. Okay, I'm not saying that every kid's going to say that, but it just points to a problem, I think. And this is where Global Nomads Group comes in. And what we try to do is connect kids from different parts of the world and expose them, give them knowledge about the others in the other countries, foreign cultures, expose them to the world and get them interested in international affairs in that process. And we've been using Polycom video systems as our principal tool to expose these kids and introduce them to their peers miles away. I can tell you about a couple of programs that we've done in the past. Well, there are a couple of ways that GNG can actually help the students and teachers. One is to complement already existing curriculum. Let's say that you're doing a unit on the Holocaust. A couple of years ago, we went to Rwanda for the 10th anniversary of the genocide. And we had high school students talking to kids their own age in Rwanda who had survived the genocide. Now you can imagine the impact that this had on the kids in the States. They saw, you know, something that was abstract for them before, something that, you know, they thought, well, that was in the past. Well, they learned that people 17, 16, 18 years old had actually gone through this experience, and it just became real for them. And it was just tremendously powerful. Another example, when we were talking about going to war possibly with Iraq, well, we decided, why not get American kids to talk to Iraqi kids? What's going to happen then? We thought, okay, it could be really explosive, but then again, it could be really interesting. So we went to Iraq for a month, and yeah, I'm gonna skim through the difficulties of doing this, but we connected kids in Connecticut with their peers in Baghdad. They got to talk about a lot of things, including, you know, politics, of course, but mostly what it is to be a teenager in Iraq, a teenager in Bloomfield, Connecticut, or where have you. What kind of music do you listen to? What kind of food does your mother like to make? You know, what do you do on the weekends? So it was really, at the end, it was just learning about each other's similarities and differences, and appreciating each other's similarities and differences as well. So that was extremely powerful. After the war, we went back to Iraq to see how these people had changed. And the same thing, it's just, you can imagine how powerful this is for a kid who has very little knowledge about that country and only hears about that country through the news, you know, through conflict, through pretty much negative things. So that's what we do. Upcoming programs I can tell you a little bit about. We have a partnership with an organization called Semester at Sea. I don't know if any of you are aware of that organization. It's a ship that takes college students around the world to learn about different cultures. And we have a partnership with them whereby we are on the ship and organize video conferences in each of the countries that they go to. Last year, the overarching theme of the program was HIV and AIDS throughout the world. And this year, it's going to be religions of the world. So students will have the opportunity to learn about, you know, tons of religions in 9 different countries. So that should be very interesting as well. And that'll be in the spring of 2007. So that's it in a nutshell. Yes, sir.
David, all your stuff is archived on the site, too. So.
Yep, all our stuff is archived on the website, the web streaming. So you have an opportunity to see that. And for those of you who don't, sir, I'm going to give you, this is a little brochure on GG. I gave you one, right?
Wow, David McCourt from the Global Nomads Group. Y'all. That's it for Snacks for the Brain, episode 40. We're going to lead you out with a wonderful song from Slackstream.
Check them out at music.pacha.com.
See ya!
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide. Check out the website at www.vanderbilt.edu/CSO.
When you're lonely, lost your way, and you're in your darkest day, don't you know the sun's going to shine again? When your luck is running out and your mind is full of doubt, don't you know that everything will work out just fine? The sun again will shine upon your troubled mind. Oh, my baby, you will shine. And all those distant dreams are closer than they seem. Oh, my baby, you will shine. Closer than they seem. Oh, my baby, you will shine.
trouble.